Okay, today's the fourth Sunday in Advent, and we're looking today at Christmas as a love story. And what we want to understand today is Christmas is that original day when love came down, and it's the love story of all love stories. And we're going to go through a couple of different ideas and how that affects our lives today. But I want to remind you, inside your bulletin, there's a set of sermon notes. It's just a really short outline of what I'm going to be talking about today. And if there's anything that God says to you through any of these words today, jot it down and it'll be with you a couple weeks from now if you have a thought about that. And that's the only reason that's there. And I always pray that God speaks to us when we spend time together like that. Okay, let's just begin with this idea of who God is. And the truth is, in America, somewhere around 90% of Americans believe that there is a God. Or they believe that there's some higher power. They believe there's some supreme being. Around 90% of Americans admit to that. They admit that there's something greater than just us. There is something bigger. It's just they all have a different idea. Many people have a different idea of what that supreme being is or what the attributes of that supreme being is, how that God acts out, and so forth. And they even have different names for that being. J.B. Phillips wrote a book. This is going back a long way. J.B. Phillips wrote a book. It was titled, Your God is Too Small. And inside of that book, J.B. gave a lot of ideas about what people's ideas were about God. What were the characteristics of God? Some people thought God was a police officer, you know, just waiting for you to mess up so he can, you know, pull out the radar detector and nab you. You know, some people thought that God was a judge. God was the one sitting behind the bench waiting to produce or pronounce a sentence over those things that you've done. Some people actually came forth and expressed that God was like a father that hadn't shown his love, that was detached in some far-off, distant place. So there were all of these different ideas of what people thought about God. And you know, when we go to the Bible, we even find that there are different biblical authors. And the truth is, in the Old Testament, if you look at the Old Testament, it covers about 1,800 years of history, and it's written over a period of about 800 years. And what we find is when we look at these different periods and these different times, people's conceptions of God changed. So if you look early on, we find people who have God's conception as a warrior God. Now, if you're a very small country and you're always under the influence and at risk of being captured or taken over or taken away by another country, you need a warrior God. You need a God with a strong arm, you know? And that's the way a lot of the gods in the ancient Near East were. They were warrior gods. In other places, you find that God is vengeful and jealous. And in other places, you find that God's primary attribute is holiness. And then we get on to the more lofty attributes of God, where it's grace and mercy, okay, and justice and righteousness. And then finally, we come to this idea that God is love. And we find this in the Old Testament, you know, and it really becomes apparent, and it cries out totally, completely in the New Testament. But we find it in the Old Testament. Now, you really see it in what I just read to you from John's epistle, this 1 John, when we hear those words, Beloved, let us love one another because love is from God. You know, we really hear it there. The defining attribute of God's character in 1 John for God is love. But it would be helpful for us to understand when we look at scriptures, when we look at the Old and the New Testament, what are these attributes that are coming at us when we talk about God is love? What does that mean? So we want to take a look first at the Old Testament. We're going to take a look at two Hebrew words that come from the Old Testament that will help us understanding that. These are the words that are lifted up most of the time, over 200 times in the Old Testament for what God is. And the first one is hesed. And you've heard me talk about these words in the past. Hesed comes to us from the Old Testament. It's a Hebrew word. And that word primarily means steadfast love. That's what we see it translated as most of the time. Hesed is a very rich word. It has such a rich meaning that we can't find just one or two English words that'll capture this. It takes a lot of English to really figure out what hesed means. So it helps us to know what hesed means, especially if hesed means God's love and God is expecting us to express that to other people, we need to know what it means, okay? And what we find out here is it means steadfast love. It also means covenant love. But it's an interesting kind of covenant love. The steadfast covenant love that we find in hesed is a very uneven covenant. It's almost a one-way love. And it's a type of love that you find when you're loving people who don't deserve it, and they're not going to reciprocate and offer it back, and they're not going to do anything that they can do to deserve it, but you can love them anyway. It's that kind of covenant love. It also means loyalty. We find this love being a kind of love that God will not abandon you, no matter how bad you've been or what you've done. Even if you don't deserve it, God will not abandon you. It also means faithfulness. Sometimes we see it translated as faithful, a God who will always be there. So we hear this steadfast love, but it means more than that. It goes over and over and over again. It's this God that even though you might fall away, God will always be there kind of love in this uneven covenant. We also find it translated as mercy, a God who will have mercy on us through a love that is, it also connotes grace in different ways. We actually went through this in the men's group this week. We were talking about grace and mercy, and we were in Ephesians talking about the difference. And I'll repeat those definitions again. Grace is when God gives you things you don't deserve. Mercy is when God doesn't give you what you do deserve. So that's how we remember those two things. The word hesed also gives this sense of well-being. When you're loving someone, and you're loving them, wishing and giving well-being onto them. So you care about how well they're doing. You're caring about their health. And this last one, the care and love of well-being, kind of encompasses all those other definitions. Okay, but it's God wanting what's good for you. God wanting to bless you. God wants you to have life and have it abundantly, as Jesus says. That's the first word we find in the Old Testament, hesed. And again, it's a very rich word. The second word we find for love in the Old Testament is ahava. Now, ahava is the word that we find, the Hebrew word we find in contemporary language for love. Ahava comes from the Hebrew word hav. Hav means give. So ahava means I give. Now just think about that for a second. The word for love that describes the attribute of God in the Old Testament comes from the word give, means I give. It's the contemporary word for Hebrew. So in other words, for us to say to someone, I love you, but you don't act, you don't give, you don't do anything, is to make that a very cheap usage of the word love. So the very usage of this word means that you're giving, means that you're putting yourself out there. It's a decision of the will. To love is not to say something, it's to do something. It's manifest in the action of actually saying it. So the action tells us of a self-giving attribute of God from one to another. So like hesed, it's about well-being, it's about self-giving, it's about desire to bring about the well-being of another person, maybe at the sacrifice of your own. It's to give up your best to ensure someone else's best. And it is also to stand by them, no matter what, to be there. And you know, this helps me, I look at my relationships with Kim and my boys, it helps me understand that kind of love. It's not just a feeling, it's to make sure that their well-being is before my well-being. It's to love them in such a way that I act out. And that's the primary willingness there, it's the primary action, is they come before I do. You know, and that's what biblical love looks like. It's a giving, okay? Now in the New Testament, we have two Greek counterparts to these words, and we've heard these Greek counterparts before also. They are philia and agape. Now philia, we know that because that's our city, right? Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. So philia is this kind of love that is expressed between kin. So it can be between a brother and a sister. And I'll tell you what, my sister Tina, when we grew up, boy, did she ever get on my nerves. Some of you have had sisters, I know. Man, she got on my nerves. She was annoying. She drove me crazy. But if you picked on my sister, you messed with my sister, I was there. You don't mess with my sister, okay? So philia is this covenant family kind of love. And you know, when it comes to that point, and you know, somebody's messing with your sister, you got to say, I can mess with my sister. You can't mess with my sister. It's that kind of love. It can be the kind of love that connection between a parent and a child. It's that kind of love, okay? That's a primary way of acting. It's not a feeling. It's a primary way of acting. Now, the second word, agape, this is the one that we hear most of, and it's used in a variety of ways, but it's primarily known as that sacrificial love, and it's that love that we find with Jesus Christ on the cross, right? It's that sacrificing of himself. God's love for us is shown in Jesus, through the sacrifice. So it's the self-giving love of God. So we have this idea in all of these definitions of love. It's a giving. It's an action. And this is very, very significant. It's central to the idea of love, and it's central to the idea of love in God's nature. Okay, God gives to us. God seeks our well-being. God is faithful to us. He won't leave us. He's loyal to us. He's kind to us. He shows grace and mercy towards us. That's the primary attribute of love that we find here in this epistle that I read this morning from 1 John. And let me ask you this. You know, if we turn to, the one that everybody knows, right? John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave. It's a giving. It's an action. God so loved the world that he ahava, that he gave his son. Why? He loved us that much so that we might be saved. All right? So in 1 John 4 that I just read, God's love was revealed among us in this way. God sent his only son into the world so that we might live through him, and this is love. God loved us to save us from ourselves, from death, from fear. God loved us, and he sought to redeem us as his people. And he was worried, he was concerned about our well-being in doing that, so he gave himself. And he's expressing a willingness to do that. So Christmas is a love story. Christmas is a giving. Christmas is God's ahava. It's the present that we've seen when love came down that very first time. And folks, this is really, really hard for us to wrap our minds around. This kind of love is so hard for us to get, you know. So what happens is God sends us indicators in the world. We have these signs that comes to us, and we get these glimpses of it, unconditional love some of the times, you know. And we all have different ones. For mine, you know, one of the signs of this unconditional love is my children. You know, growing up, my children, I would come home from work and they would hear that back door slam, and I would come in and they would come running, "Daddy's home, Daddy's home, Daddy's home," you know. And it was, they didn't care if I had a bad day or a good day. They didn't care if I was a success or a failure. They didn't care anything. They just came, they just couldn't wait. "Daddy's home," you know. That lasted until they were about 11. And then it became another family member who showed me that unconditional love, and that is our dog Lily, you know. Dogs have this amazing ability, you know. They can hear a car pull in the driveway, and they know which car it is. You know, they hear a car door slam, they know the sound of your car door. And, you know, when I come home now, you know, I come home, I get into the driveway, I'm barely stopped and have the door open, and she's there, the head's bobbing up and down, the tail's doing revolutions, you know, she's bopping all around. She doesn't care what kind of day I had or if I was a success or failure, it doesn't matter to her. She's there, she's loving, totally unconditional. You know, it's the most amazing thing. It's a sign. It's an indicator of what we have, you know, and God's love for us. And that I love. I saw a video a few years ago. This video is about 10 years old, but it's this video that I think helps us understand through the life of a dog the unconditional love of God. And I just want to see what you think. Go ahead, Kevin. You have friends who don't go to church, but they love dogs. Just maybe something like this, if you'd share this with them, they would get just maybe a glimpse or an idea of what the love of God is like. And then maybe together we can help them understand this extravagant, wonderful love that we don't even understand. And the truth is, every one of us needs to be loved. We're made for that. We're made to be loved. And you can just tell it when you see that crying baby, right? You see that crying baby and the parent picks it up and holds it tight and murmurs a couple of words and that baby cries down. That baby doesn't even know it needs love. But when it's loved, it responds. And you know, even as we grow, we have that longing in our lives to be treasured, to be loved, to be significant in some way. You know, and there's some folks, maybe some of you didn't receive that when you were little. Our parents over our lives say things to us sometimes that we never forget. And one of the things that my dad said to me that I will never, ever forget, and he said these words, "I never heard my dad tell me that he loved me." He never heard the words from his father, "I love you, Aiden." And I think about that, and I just think about how my dad must have gone through at least a certain part of his life, wondering how he could become worthy of love. What could he do to become worthy of that? What would he how could he do to convince himself that he was worthy of that kind of love, you know? And here's the thing. Your parents may have never told you that. Your spouse might not tell you that enough. Maybe your kids have walked away and hurt you. But here's what I want you to know. There is one who loves you more than you can ever, ever understand. There's a love that is there for you that will never leave you. It's a love from the one who created you in your mother's womb, has never left you, and has been there every day. And it's a covenant, loyalty, grace-filled, steadfast kind of love that will not let you go. And when you finally get that, when you finally trust that, it changes everything. And here's what I know about my dad. Somewhere along the line, he got that. And it changed everything. Don't feel bad for my dad. When that changed everything, he and I never met each other, spent any time together that we didn't exchange those words. I love you, Tom. I love you, Dad. Who in your life that you can think of now, and God's putting names into your heart, needs that kind of love? Has the love of God changed you? And for Christians, the ultimate sign of this love is when Jesus gave his life on the cross, and it was God saying, I love you this much. I love you so much. I'll never let you go. So, you know, a lot of people, they look at the cross and they see a sign of Roman crucifixion. We look at it and we see the ultimate sign of love. That there was one who loved us enough to suffer for us, enough to die for us. And, you know, Jesus said there is no greater love, right, than one who lays down his life for another. There's a great book, and this book is by Brennan Manning. It's called All is Grace. Brennan Manning is more famous for a book that he wrote probably over 10 or 12 years ago, called The Ragamuffin Gospel. And Brendan Manning was a Catholic priest. He's left the priesthood, but he still shares his life with people. He preaches and writes. He's written a lot of books. But in All His Grace, he tells a story about his life early on when he was in the Marine Corps. And he was on the ground in North Korea in that war. And he said he and another group of soldiers were in charge of being dropped very close or behind enemy lines. And what they would do is they would establish forward positions. And the interesting thing is Brennan Manning was not born Brennan Manning. He was born Richard Manning. And then Richard said that he and another man were in charge of moving forward, and as they moved forward, they would call the rest of the patrol forward with them, and that other man's name was Ray Brennan. And he said, Ray and I had gone forward to a position, and we had stopped to take a break, and this is what he writes in the book. He says, we were passing a chocolate bar back and forth. Ray took the last bite when a grenade lobbed by an undetected North Korean landed squarely in the center of the bunker. Ray was the first to spot it. Almost nonchalantly, he flipped the candy wrapper aside and fell on the grenade. It detonated instantly. His stomach smothered the explosion, and I was completely unharmed and untouched. He looked up at me and winked, and then he rolled over and died. Isn't that a chilling story? And Richard Manning said he came back from the Korean War with a whole new outlook on life. He came back from the Korean War, and one of the first things that he did was he changed his first name from Richard to Brennan. And he would be known from that time forward as Brennan Manning. Why? Because he always wanted to be reminded every day that somebody gave up his life for him, and he wanted to make sure the life that he led was worthy of that sacrifice. Isn't that amazing? Folks, how do you live in response to somebody who gave up their life for you? How do you do that? When someone lays down their life for you, what you do is you take up their name. That's why you are a Christian. That's why you're Christian. Because we take that name and we seek to live a life that honors the sacrifice that was made on our behalf so that we could do this in worship and prayer and praise and daily living. What is the sign from you to others that you are living a life that is worthy of someone else's sacrifice? And remember what we're looking for here. We're looking for indicators of love, right? We're looking for the signs of love. What were the signs of love that came down on that very first Christmas? Well, for the wise men, it was the star. They followed that star, and it took them to the love that came down. For the shepherds, it was the angels who came and sang the song, right? They came and they sang that song and told them that there would be a baby that they could look for. So the question is, how will others see that sign today? What will be the sign for everyone else out there? What will the people know? How will they know that you are a recipient of that love? And that is the answer, the indicator, the sign is love. Now here's the deal. When you operate your life in a love deficit, how can you give love to other people? If you're in a love deficit in your life, you don't have any love that's free to give away, and you can't give it away because you're not sure that there'll be enough of it left over for you. So you can't love others if you're in that place. You can't give yourself to other people and be selfless. You can't do that. If there's not enough for me, how can I give it away? But when you finally draw from those deep wells of God's love that came down in that very first Christmas story, that love story, those endless wells of love, and when you have that time, you have that experience in your life, when you know that you will always be loved more than with more love than you can ever accept, you will have more than enough to give away. There's always more, and there's plenty for everyone. And that's what John is telling us. He says, beloved, since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God. But if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is perfected in us. No one has ever seen God. And the only way people do see God is God's love shining through you and through me. You know, and the truth is, that's what love looks like. But we get it so complicated, especially at Christmas time. We get it so complicated because we're running around looking for that perfect gift that's going to show Mom just how much I love her, you know? And here's my experience. I don't even ask my mom what she wants anymore. And you know something? I don't ask her because she has everything she can need. There is absolutely nothing that I can give her. So here's what love looks like to my mom. What love looks like to my mom is some when I'm willing to come and spend a little time and let her be mom. Even though I'm 56 years old, let her dote on me and cook for me and do those things. That's the best gift I can give her. Because I can tell you right now, folks, the best gift is not perfume and a shirt. It's spending time with someone who wants somebody there to listen, to talk to be in relationship with. That's the gift. This year, how can you express that in giving of yourself, in blessing someone, and giving to the gift of their well-being and strengthening them just by letting them know that you haven't forgotten them? Okay, that's what love looks like for my mom, and maybe that's what it looks like for some of you. Do you know what love looks like for some of the people in the poorest parts of Radnor Township? It looks like a bag of groceries. It looks like a ham or a frozen turkey. It looks like a warm place to come and have some decisions to make and a listening ear and a smile with no strings attached. Do you know what love looks like to some of the poor and the homeless out in Pottstown? It looks like people are willing to come to a church on a Saturday and take up their time to cook a meal, transport it, and serve it to them as if they mean something, where they can make decisions and enter into relationship in a warm place with a smile and a conversation. You know what love looks like to kids in Liberia who are sitting on the floor while they do their reading and their arithmetic? It's a church that's thousands of miles away that's willing to buy them wood so their parents can build them a chair to sit on. And you know what I'm learning? This is all about Christmas Challenge. You know that. Every year, 100% of our Christmas Eve offering goes out to those kind of people whom God came to share his gifts with on that very first Christmas, and that's what we're going to do this year. Last year was over $35,000, and 100% of that goes out to change lives in the community. And this year, we've made an effort to move into the Philadelphia School District, and I've gotten, your Christmas Challenge team is hard at work. They've gotten letters back from teachers in elementary schools in Philadelphia. You know what I was surprised at? The number one request from those teachers was? It wasn't musical instruments or art supplies. Wipes. Because a lot of these kids don't learn personal hygiene at home. They're teaching more than reading and arithmetic. So that's what we do. And here's what I want you to know. When you participate in Christmas Challenge, and Christmas Challenge, you know what it is. That is to bring a gift on Christmas Eve equal to what you spend on everybody else. And we turn that right around and send it out in the community. And here's what I want you to know. that your hands are able to convey the kind of love that God comes, that ahava, the hesed, the philia, and the agape that we're called to give and shine on others. And when you do that, you're participating in sharing God with people who may never, ever experience God in any other way. I want you to know that you have been loved in order to love others. Christmas is a love story. I'm so proud to be your pastor in the way you participate in these things like the food closet and the food pantry and Chosen 300 and Christmas Challenge. May you have the very best Christmas ever and know that you are loved. Let's pray.